Good morning. Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Afghanistan's Soviet-backed President Najibullah claims on Kabul radio he's crushed a coup attempt by his defense chief, a longtime rival who the radio claims has sided with Mujahideen rebels. The BBC's Lise Doucette is following reports from Islamabad.
The telex and telephone lines are down in Kabul now, so it's difficult to get an independent account of what's actually happening. The reports earlier today spoke of fierce fighting in the streets, and they talked of unidentified aircraft bombing the presidential palace, indicating that the Air Force was also involved in what seems to have been a coup attempt. But the Kabul radio is now carrying a statement by the Supreme Command of the Armed Forces, signed by President Najibullah, which says that the coup has failed. Now, the fact that President Najibullah has signed it indicates that the high command has remained loyal to him. He is the supreme commander of the armed forces and not to General Tanai, who is the defense minister. So the radio has called for the capture, dead or alive, of the defense minister, indicating that he is the main man in all of today's events.
Had there been indications before today of a split in the government?
These events are not surprising. There have been several confrontations between President Najibullah and General Tanai over the past year. And in fact, in December, they were virtually eyeball to eyeball. They both mobilized their troops. The tensions were contained, partly on the intervention of the Soviet Union, who stands to lose if there is this kind of confrontation. But on my last visit to Kabul, which was a few weeks ago, it was believed that although the tension had subsided, that it could resume again at any time, and this seems to have happened now.
Reporter Lise Doucette in Islamabad. Officials in Washington confirm the coup fighting, but say they can't tell which side was winning.
You're hearing news on KNX.
Seems every time Israel gets pushed to the brink of peace talks, its government starts to crumble like a matzah. The hard-right Likud party has now conditionally accepted a U.S.-backed proposal for negotiations, but with some big ifs. If rejected any hint of a PLO negotiating role or any return of Arab East Jerusalem, Vice Premier Shimon Peres says his more dovish Labor Party may just quit the coalition.
We see in the position taken by the Likud as an end to the present peace process. So if this is the nature of their decision, this means the end of the present government.
This is Lawrence Rifkin in Jerusalem. Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir and fellow Likud ministers are still against allowing the participation of East Jerusalem Arabs in West Bank and Gaza Strip elections, something which had been stipulated in a State Department formula to get the elections on the road. The ministers are also insisting that Israel opt out of any peace process that the Palestine Liberation Organization joins. West Bank and Gaza Strip Palestinians are just as adamant in demanding PLO participation, while the Likud's junior unity coalition partner, the Labor Party, is willing to include East Jerusalem Arabs. What bears watching now is whether a disgruntled Labor will leave the government and how Washington will react. For it's the U.S. which has been trying to get the Israelis and Palestinians together and which has been highly critical of past Israeli conditions. Lawrence Rifkin, CBS News, Jerusalem.
At the White House right now, President Bush is welcoming Italian Prime Minister Andreotti, who is on a three-day visit to Washington. Among the things they'll be talking about in their White House discussions is Italy's interest in having a say in the reunification of Germany. West Germany has offered assurances to a nervous Poland, newsman Jesse Schulman reports.
A carefully worded compromise has averted a damaging split between Chancellor Helmut Kohl and his foreign minister, Hans-Dietrich Genscher. At issue in the highly technical but emotionally charged dispute, the right way to put a final legal seal on Poland's border with a united Germany. About a third of modern Poland is territory that was taken from Germany at the end of World War II. Last week, Chancellor Helmut Kohl said Poland would have to make political guarantees before he would agree to a declaration recognizing the border as permanent. The mood led to accusations Kohl was raising the shadow of German expansion and catering to the small minority of West Germans who still hope to regain the lost lands. Foreign Minister Genscher opposed Kohl's demands, and the compromise appears to be a Genscher victory. But observers say the damage may already be done. Jesse Schulman for CBS News, Bonn.
This is Barry Peterson in Moscow. Mikhail Gorbachev was talking tough on German reunification today during a Kremlin meeting with East German leader Hans Modrow. The Soviets, he says, oppose any German plans to reclaim territory held before World War II, that is now a part of Poland or the Soviet Union. Meanwhile, he was getting good news on another front. Results from weekend local elections show reform-minded candidates doing well against old-line communists. If reformers gain a voice in the heartland, says CBS News consultant Steve Cohen, it's an insurance policy for Gorbachev.
Now there are millions of elected officials who have a political stake in the process of reform, and that makes it less likely that anyone at Moscow would try to stop the process by force.
For Gorbachev, it's a fresh chance to get his reforms and his country moving again. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Moscow.
More trouble in Soviet Uzbekistan, where Muslims demanding the eviction of Meskhetian Turks went on a weekend rampage in Tashkent, leaving four dead. Some 4,000 Turks have been evacuated. Philippine opposition leader Juan Ponce Enrile is preparing to walk out of the jail in Manila, where he's been held on charges of rebellion against President Aquino's government. The Supreme Court said he could go free after posting a $4,000 bond. They'll be playing post office in Washington this afternoon, and as a result, you're likely to be paying more for love letters and most other postal services. To cover a big deficit, the Postal Board of Governors is expected to recommend an average 19% increase in mail rates. A first-class stamp would go to 30 cents. But as correspondent Rob Armstrong reports, there's growing dissatisfaction with the Postal Service.
While a small but growing number of people are encouraging privatization of the Postal Service to make it more efficient, the huge letter carriers union predictably opposes making the post office a private business and supports the planned increase in postal rates. But outside the main post office here in Washington, opinions ranged from accusations of gross mismanagement to resignation over the notion of a 30-cent first-class letter.
I think that that is probably one of the most inappropriately managed departments that exist.
So like every year they find a reason to raise it somewhat, but we have to live with it, I guess.
Well, I don't think they should increase the cost at all. I really don't. I think they should just remain the same.
Well, I think it's a bargain anyway.
The rates that are expected to be announced today will go into effect early next year. Back in 1971, when the current post office management structure went into effect, the cost of mailing a first-class letter was just 8 cents. Rob Armstrong, CBS News, Washington.
Actor Gary Merrill has died of cancer at his home near Portland, Maine. He was 74 and was known for supporting roles in the movies 12 O'Clock High and All About Eve. Things are bubbling again at Perrier, which today resumed distribution of its green bottles of mineral water to stores around the world, 3 weeks after a recall sparked by a benzene contamination scare. The new bottles, marked new production, are due on French shelves tomorrow and will arrive in the U.S. next month. The dollar is mixed overseas. London gold is up over a dollar, and the Dow is ahead 2.48. Time on the roundup, 10 minutes past 7.